and welcome to another edition of the podcast the rest of the Court Nerds don't want to be associated with, Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. So let's get on with it before I end up like an FBI director, before I can uncover John's dirty secret. Maybe this week's sponsor is hiring. Exlax Suppositories.
You seem upset, Mrs. Anders.
Not really, it's just...
touch of constipation?
And I'm not thrilled with my laxative.
Try anal.
Ever hear of the overnight wonder?
Exlax?
No butt plugs, you idiot.
Exlax pills.
For your rectum.
Give me your hand. Meet the overnight wonder.
It's tiny.
It's not small, it's average.
It's all you need. You see, Exlax pills gently stimulate your system's own natural rhythm.
Ha ha! Stimulation.
So in the morning...
your own system takes it from there, comfortably.
Ribbed for our pleasure.
That's for me.
Good. Just look for Exlax pills. The overnight wonder.
Because you don't always want to be conscious for butt stuff. And now the news. In way to go, internet assholes news. BioWare is putting the studio in charge of developing Mass Effect into a support role instead of lead design. BioWare's Montreal studio has been shedding and reassigning employees in the wake of the lukewarm reception of Mass Effect Andromeda. Much of the staff is going to work at EA Motive to work on Star Wars Battlefront 2. This means that there are no plans for future Mass Effect games at the moment. BioWare's main studio in Edmonton is sad that their Quebecois compatriots had so many development problems and they didn't make a stronger attempt to meddle in the US elections since everybody is doing it. Seriously, Mass Effect Andromeda is not a bad game. In fact, it's a good game. You spoiled internet brats just wanted a perfect game. Now we don't have any game for this foreseeable future. So content yourself with the upcoming DLC, which I'm sure the remaining crew at Montreal will work real hard at because it might not tie into any future games. Jackasses.
You don't watch many horror vids, do you? We have no idea what's down here.
And we never will if we miss something because we're huddled in a group. I'll be careful.
Just stay on the radio.
I'm on frequency 145.8. Stay safe.
10 credits say she ends up in a pit of spikes.
In Don't Panic Yet news, last week I talked about the upcoming 8th edition rule set for Warhammer 40k and has a lot of people excited. Except for the 30k players. Every Horus Heresy player is concerned about a sentence in last week's Warhammer Digital. It reads, quote, 30k will be getting updated rules to go with 8th edition, end quote. The community freaked out! We, I include myself in this cabal, pay premium for those models and books. Hell, if you were to buy all the campaign books off of Forge World right now, you would be dropping over $1,000. For 12 books! They are nice books, but we don't want to have to buy them all over again. Now, Forge World knows all this, and they commented that 7th edition rules will stay in effect for, quote, a while yet, end quote. Not making me feel great, guys! But let's clarify. This is what I think they meant. People love bringing 30k into 40k as relics, so with 8th edition, we'll get updated 30k rules for playing them in the 40k universe. Got it? Can we all be calm now? But they will eventually update the core 30k rule set in the future. I mean, what? I just didn't mumble anything. Weird.
Oh dear, I've been struck in the bloody mumble pack.
Now tell me where you hid the hydrogen bomb.
It is hidden in the head of the Shalalalome, right next to the Bludgeon Room.
I'm sorry, didn't catch that last part.
It's in the head of the Bludgeon Room, next to the Bludgeon Room.
One more time.
In This Is Only a Distraction and Until Injustice 2 news, yes, Prey came out and every core gamer seems to be slobbering all over Arcane's sci-fi shooter. I would like to pose a different perspective on this game than most. It's not a great game. Sure, it's difficult at times, but that's what settings are for. It does a lot of cool things, but they're all things we've seen before. Nearly everything good about Prey is pulled from a game designed and released a decade before it. Well, 4 other games to be exact. As Morgan Yu, you are thrust into the aftermath of a failed research project with only a wrench for protection. Just like Jack in Bioshock. The desolate ruined space station setting brings back memories of Dead Space. And the experimental gameplay takes cues from Dishonored, which was also developed by Franco-US studio Arcane. Then there's the fact that it reimagines the original Prey, a well-received sci-fi shooter from 2006, which mixed extraterrestrial and Native American themes to, well, for me, underwhelming effect. The new Prey takes the highlights of these games, but merely allows them to coexist in a single habitat, never doing anything new with the foundational building blocks it has borrowed. The game takes place in the year 2032 in an alternative reality where President John F. Kennedy was never assassinated, but instead worked with the Soviet Union to launch the Talos 1 space station. Waking up in the space station is either a male or female version of Morgan Yu. The player embarks on a journey to rediscover the past of the protagonist we are given no information about at first. This is a decidedly mundane storyline, and what should have been a race against time to stop an alien threat aboard Talos 1 from making its way back to Earth. Instead of a full-throttle gauntlet against Typhon aliens, Prey's main narrative diverts the player at every turn, derailing the brilliant opening segment with a slow, drawn-out middle act. Fetch quests send Morgan back and forth across Talos 1, and characters are thrust into the plot as a deus ex machina in an attempt to liven up the pacing. On top of this, it feels as though Prey's main antagonist of sorts only rears their head when they're called upon, mainly reacting to Morgan pressing further through Talos 1 rather than attempting to stop them at every turn. But while the main story of Prey drags, the characters Morgan can meet the side missions are at least interesting, if a bit underutilized. These quests have you taking out serial killer, avenging a dead lover of another character, and rapidly scouring Talos 1 for medical items before time runs out for an injured character. This is where Prey shines, giving the players an exciting, varied group of tasks that allows Morgan to meet a host of interesting characters. Perhaps, if these sharper, better directed, and more interesting strands had been pulled into the main narrative, instead of meandering fetch and retrieve objects that were required to complete, the campaign would have thrilled for a bit longer. I mean, heck, a speedrunner has already beat the game in 20 minutes. Yeah. Talos 1 itself is an absolute behemoth of a space station, and while it's easy to get lost within its multitude of corridors and foyers, these side characters help pump life into the thin atmosphere of the narrative. Audio logs and deceased crew members paint a clear picture of what things are like before the Typhon alien outbreak, and in fact, you can later find crew members stalking Talos 1 in the form of Typhon alien brings a spine-chilling horror aspect to Prey. The Typhon aliens make for an interesting enemy, bringing the atmosphere of fear to Talos 1. The most interesting are these are mimics, which can transform into any object in the environment. It's fascinating design concept, often rendering Morgan Yu a paranoid mess, as he frantically attempts to recall whether the mug had been there on the desk just a second ago, or whether it's about to turn into an alien and attempt to kill him. Although the mimics are unique as video game enemies, they are largely sacrificed later in the game for the Phantoms, hulking masses of strange dark material, and other less interesting monstrosities. While different varieties of Phantom can shoot bolts of energy, fire, or duplicate themselves entirely, all Phantoms can teleport with great speed, and this combined with their generous health pool and the scarcity of ammunition for the player often makes combat more frustrating than tense. But the player has a variety of ways to fight back, utilizing an impressive arsenal of weapons to keep the Typhon threat at bay. Every weapon Morgan comes across, whether it's a shotgun or a pistol, to the Q-beam or the glue cannon, all feel decidedly different to wield, bringing a nice mix of combat to Prey. The shotgun packs a weighty punch to any Typhon alien, while the glue cannon can be used both to freeze enemies in place as well as forming makeshift platforms so Morgan can climb over walls and reach other heights in Talos 1. On top of all this, Morgan can even harness Typhon abilities, allowing the player to teleport like a Phantom or disguise themselves as objects like a mimic. These abilities come with a cost, however, as should a player inject too many of the neuromound tools found in Talos into any of the Typhon abilities, the automated turrets around Talos 1 will define Morgan as an alien threat, gunning down the player on sight. Although these Typhon abilities rapidly expand the way any individual player can take on an objective in Talos 1, the trade-off of having double the enemies to face feels like Prey severely punishes players for harnessing the abilities that are undoubtedly the most fun to use. Prey might also have a wrench in common with Bioshock. It doesn't have a big daddy of its own. Although Prey possesses an exciting arsenal of weaponry and abilities and attention-grabbing enemies of the mimics, nothing ever becomes awe-inspiring or generally memorable in its borrowed offerings. What could have been breakneck race around Talos 1 is hampered by a constant plot detours and an overly harsh kickback for investing in the best abilities of the game. The Arkane Studios have an interesting approach to player empowerment. Dishonored provides an array for violent powers, but then asked us not to use them, while Prey dares plot players to break the rules and then punish them for doing so. In the end, I really can't give this game a good grade. I think you should probably play it, but, you know, don't try to do everything. It's just not worth it.
Raise your right hand. Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech haolam.
What just happened?
You're a bounty hunter, silly.
A bounty hunter?
One last thing. There's a reward. Dead or alive, just bring them back in, 4 pieces or less.
Oh. Hey, Wheel of Insanity, how about you give me a fun topic that doesn't make people feel uncomfortable? It says, talk about the usefulness of brainstorming sessions. Oh man, this is going to be another one of those topics where most people will make snap judgments supporting brainstorming sessions. But I'm here to tell you that brainstorming sessions tend to do more harm than good, socially, corporately, and scientifically. Don't get me wrong, it can be useful at times when you and your significant other are trying to come to a mutually agreed upon solution. However, in most other settings, it isn't usually the best idea that wins out, but one that has the most charismatic proponent. Let me relate to you a story. The idea was simple. Strapped for cash and searching for ways to persuade founders to be more generous, one Italian scientist had a brainwave. Why couldn't researchers trade in their old microscopes for cash? The car company Fiat, after all, ran a scheme that paid owners to relinquish 10-year-old models with the amount of compensation matched by the government. History suggests the microscope idea went nowhere. It was quickly dismissed as unworkable. Indeed, it survives only because it was mentioned in The Lancet in a brief write-up in 1997 meeting described as a brainstorm on European Union research funding. That makes it unusual because unused suggestions that emerge in brainstorming sessions tend not to even leave the room. They lie forgotten, scrawled on pinky sticky notes, on walls, flip charts, and corporate headquarters everywhere. They have done so since the concept of brainstorms was popularized in the 1950s as a way of freeing the creativity of the group. No idea generated, the brainstorming rules insist, is a bad idea. But what if that idea is itself a bad idea? In an article in this week's Nature, the organizational psychologist David Berkus argues that brainstorming sessions stifle rather than unleash solutions. It's not a new suggestion. Indeed, Berkus draws upon research published by more than a decade ago to help with his case that immediate criticism helps rather than hinders creativity. But it comes at a valuable and pertinent time. A time when the intellectual free-for-all of the brainstorm is leaking noticeably more and more into public and political discussions of scientific issues. These discussions often tend to involve people that should have no business making decisions on topics they know nothing about. Their expertise lies in the fact that they know how to use Google or are a great group thinker. Come on, Sledge, isn't that a little unfair? No! The problem lies in the belief that every issue has equal justifications on both sides of said issue. The mantra fair and balance comes to mind. But Rupert Murdoch's holdings aren't the only ones guilty of this belief. Last week, the New York Times was heavily criticized by climate scientists and others after its new conservative columnist Brett Stevens shared his predictably negative opinion on the robustness of data and the models used to assess global warming. The newspaper offered a defense that sounds awfully like the instructions issued by a moderator of corporate brainstorming sessions. It's an idea that everyone's opinion is valid. Shouldn't we hear all opinions? Although everyone is entitled to their own view, it is not unreasonable to judge, and to expect reasonable media to choose and to highlight opinions that the rest of the documented evidence concerning, for example, climate change, childhood vaccinations, evolution, is carrying more weight than those merely perched on top of other opinions. An intellectual brainstorm is no way to respond to a legitimate concerns thrown up by shifting political sands of today, and an uncertain place for science and reason. Because it is not for a lack of creative thought that threatens at present. It is more an unwillingness to seek and agree common ground and then build upon it. That is a difficult job. Experts will be labeled elitists or disconnected intelligentsia. The list will go on. But by reaching out to communities and engaging with issues they raise, you'll recruit a new generation of scientists. And hopefully, like Bill Nye, you can try to save the world.
Yes, they're rednecks and as such should be pitied and marginalized. But, Your Honor, not prosecuted.
That's all I have time for this week on Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. Head over to thecourtofnerds.com and read Grant's review of Renato Jones, and then share it via the social media of your choice. It's good. I'm Kevin saying, well, you know what? I'll let Philkin7 say it. Bye.
God, she's hot. Isn't that how the story goes? Hotness, intenseness, sexity. Together we're a quasar burning at both ends. In both ends, together we explode. Sexity.